Before I begin, I wanted to mention that this year should be a blessing and a merit for the health and success of the families of Regina Bas Yosef Reuven and Yeshaya Ben Yisrael Binyamin Wolf Ben Zvi Hirsch and Baruch Ben Binyamin Wolf, and that they should only have mazel and bracha and simcha. Tonight I'd like to talk about something which most people are really in many ways are unaware of, and included in the concepts of the ideas that I want to present tonight in many ways is the explanation of why we see such a tremendous deterioration of America. And not only that, but in many ways, the future of America at the end of time. Because these principles affect the entire world, as we will see. And certainly they affect America. And at the end of time, we will see that America joins many of the countries that the Jews went through. And in many ways, the understanding of the gullus, the exile of a Jew, how does it influence or affect the country that is the host of America, even when the Jews are in gullus, exile? That's a very important idea. And we think in many ways that America is not going to share the same fate, but in many ways they will. America will share the same fate. But what's interesting, that's the bad news, but the good news is that, as I will point out, America will escape the fate of the previous countries that were host to the Jews when they were in exile. So that's the good news. But it has to, of course, have an explanation. Why? So you have to understand the fundamental idea, which I will talk about. There are different points of these ideas that I had mentioned, you know, over the years and so on. But it's very important to organize and understand them at a basic ground level. And then we understand exactly what will happen and why things are happening the way they are. And anyway, what is important to know is that there are two fundamental operations for the Jews, which is very important. These two operations of the Jew, that the Jews are involved with is critical for what's called the tikkun process. The tikkun, I of course talked about numerous times, the concept of the tikkun, right, which really is to bring God back into the Bria, the return or the restoration, or as it says in the Shmon Esrei, right, HaMachzir Shechinos LeTzion, who will restore, return the divine presence to this world. And that, it's amazing, that bracha in Shmon Esrei, right, sums up really the essence of what we hope, you see, because that's really the fundamental pivot of everything. It's the fundamental concept. It's more fundamental than the end of the exile and the building of the Beis HaMikdash and the coming of the Mashiach. All those three items are all what? All based on and waiting for the return of the divine presence, the Shekhinah. So we say it in Shmon Esrei, you see? That's how important it is. In any case, so as I said, there are two fundamental operations that the tikkun process requires. One, and I will explain them, and how what they do in many ways influences or determines the fate of the nations of the world itself. In any case, So the first operation is called Hispashtus Kiddusha. Okay, Hispashtus means the proliferation or the expansion of holiness. And the second idea is called Kfiya Sora, the subjugation or subduing of evil underneath Kiddusha, underneath holiness. And that's really what it is. Those two ideas, they determine, these are the objectives of what Jews have to do, since we, the Jews, are involved in accomplishing the tikkun. That's really what it's all about. Now, what does that mean? Let's take a look. Okay, I had mentioned, which we know, that what the Rosham emanates, right, is what's called spheroids, which is emanations, divine emanations. He emanates them, and these are creative forces. They are forces that are divine in nature, and they can create realities. And we know that there are 10 of them, which I've mentioned many times. In any case, what they do is they are forces that can create a reality, depending on how much, I hate to use the word divine energy, comes out of them. That's called Shefa, and so on. And that's what they do. So task one, if you want to use that idea, is to take the Shefa of the spheres, means the divine force of the spheres, and there are 10 of them, as I mentioned. I mean, there are many divisions of these forces and so on, but to keep it simple, they're basically 10. And the major objective is to have them become magnified, where they will emit much greater outflow of their force. And as a result of that, they will change reality. That's really what we want. We want them to change the reality, basically, and I'm skipping a lot of stuff. We want them to change the reality of Olam Hazeh, this world, into what's called Olam Habo, the future world. How do we transform that? And the answer is, we enlarge or we magnify the forces that they emit. And that's Hispashtus Kiddusha. Kiddusha, of course, is holiness, but it really means the holiness of the spheres. We want them to, you know, increase the output of their force, and as a result, like I said, it will change reality. What I'd like to do, instead of calling it the forces, let's call it the sparks of holiness. Nitzotze Kiddusha. Okay? And it's like, you know, it's like energy packets. You know, you increase the amount of energy packets coming out from them, and that increases the enormous amount of effect that they have. And of course, what they create, a reality much greater than the reality before, when they were emitting a lower force. Okay, it's like a 100-watt bulb that you turn up and becomes a 1,000-watt bulb. So the amount of light output is enormous. That's what we're supposed to do, using the bulb analogy. You increase the force of the bulb, and all of a sudden it's the light, the luminosity of that place becomes magnified many, many times. But the repercussions of that is that reality changes. And that's really what we want to do. That's what God wants us to do. And of course, when the forces, when the spheres emit many, much more energy, that is the concept of God returning. Because what we're really bringing down is the presence of God, is the level of magnitude of the Shekhinah itself. That's really what we bring down. In any case, so that's called Hispashtus Kiddusha. Okay, that's what we want to bring down. Okay, so God said to Avraham Avinu, and actually to Adam, you know, you are required to bring me back. And the way to do that, right, is to magnify, to increase the output of the spheres by doing my will. Because in many ways, it's mida keneged mida, measure for measure. If you do my will, that means you believe in me. So therefore, the reward for that is that you will get to see me because you believe in me, which is mida keneged mida, which is a measure for measure. You see, that's really how it works. And that's the essential mechanism of every mitzvah. When you do the mitzvah, you do his will, you suspend your will because you believe in him. So automatically, you are rewarded with the exposure of his will, which is, means the exposure of the presence of God. There you are. It's a very simple equation, and so on, which I've mentioned many times. Now, but that's his Pashas Kedusha. So we are required to do acts which are called mitzvahs, and they will increase the output of the spheres, bringing down an enormous amount of the presence of God. But there's a second operation, and that's called Kfiyas Hara, the subjugation of evil. Okay? That evil has to be subdued underneath holiness. Kfiyas Hara tachas kedusha. Now, what is that supposed to mean? Well, you have to, in order to understand that, you have to go back historically. The Baal Shem created Adam Harishon and Chava, his wife, and he told them, don't eat from a certain tree. Okay. Adam, of course, and his wife were supposed to listen to that. And we know the repercussions. Then, in many ways, he could have rectified the world because the amount of presence of God in the world was enormous. So it just needed sort of like a little push to bring more down. Not much, a little, you see. In any case, but that would be easy to do. So what the Rosh Hashanah needed, obviously, in order to make this a real test, because he wants Adam to work for it, right? So he created a being called the Satan, which is an angel, and his job is to tempt a person by offering some type of impediment, some type of a incentive not to do the will of God. And then that becomes a real test. Is Adam going to listen to the Satan? Right? And that he's called the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, right? And therefore sin against God. Or is he going to listen to God and deny the argument of the Satan? There you are. That's the classic test. So he created the Satan, and the one that represents the Satan at the time of Adam Harishon is, of course, the snake, the primordial snake or whatever, and so on. A snake was very different than what we have today, obviously. You know, he was able to speak, he was able to walk, and so on, whatever, or whatever kind of creature he really was, and so on. But obviously, he was able to communicate with Adam Harishon. And he offered Adam an argument why he should eat from the tree that God said not to eat from. Okay? And what was the argument? Rashi brings this down. Where he said, I want to tell you something, you know. You think the reason why, you know, well, God told me not to eat from the tree of good and evil, whatever, the knowledge of good and evil, because it's for my benefit. So the snake offered an argument, and this is a midrash. No, the reason why God said not to eat from that tree is because he ate from that tree, God. And that tree is a certain type of reality that will make you God. It will give you divine powers, you see. So obviously God doesn't want any competitors. He doesn't want any rivals. So he wants you not to eat from that tree. You see? So at that instant in time, that was the argument. You see, that he offered first to Chava, and then she offered that argument to Adam. And therefore, that was a tremendous incentive to eat from the tree. As it says, V'yizm kelokim, and you will be his God. It says directly that. And obviously man has the desire to be like God, which I've spoken and so on. Therefore, what happened was, Chava listened. And she refused to accept the argument that God said not to eat from the tree, and she ate. In any case, so the Satan, or rather the snake, whatever, won the temptation. He got both of them to eat from the tree. And we know what the repercussions were. By the way, it's amazing when you think about it, as an aside, that this was really the first recorded conversation in history, other than when God spoke to Adam. It already included, in that first conversation, Lashon Hara, Motzi Shem Ra, and Rechilus. What does that mean? Well, it included Lashon Hara, because what the Satan did by saying that God is not all-powerful, he gets his powers from the tree. The tree is all-powerful. So what he did is he degraded God by saying that God is not all-powerful. It's a tree that gives the powers to God. That's Lashon Hara, because that speech harms, right, the characteristic of God and so on. So that's Lashon Hara, where he bad-mouthed God. The second thing is, it's called Motzi Shem Ra, where he defamed God, because it was a lie. It's not even true. So that's called Motzi Shem Ra. And the third thing is called Rechilus. Rechilus is when you tell somebody, do you know what so-and-so said about you? He said, you're an idiot. So what's your reaction? Immediately, you develop a tremendous hatred. How could that guy say that about me? You see? In other words, you're pointing out that somebody did something against you. You see? So automatically, you engender emotions of hatred. So when the Satan told Adam that the reason why God told you not to eat from the tree isn't for your benefit, get that out of your mind. It's for his benefit. So immediately Adam says to himself, aha, so then God in a certain sense is a fraud. He's making it sound like I will benefit, right? But it's all about him. He wants to remain God alone. You see, boy, I don't like God. You see, immediately he creates a hatred, you see, against God. That's Rechilus. So it's amazing that in the first conversation of human history between Adam and another species, you already had all three Isurim, forbidden communications, which is really, when you think about it, it's really amazing and so on, you know. So therefore, when God now appears and he confronts Adam and Chava for what they did, he also confronts the snake. And what was God's punishment to the snake? Well, what God said to the snake, and this is what it adds up to, he said to the snake, you diminished my existence by saying that I'm not all powerful, right? I myself have got my powers from the tree. So what did you do? You degraded me. You diminished my existence. So here's what I'm going to do. And this is very important. That's why what happened was a mida keneged mida. And this is one of the ideas. What he did, he said to the Satan, really? What's the reality? You exist, why? Because I sent out a divine flow that makes you, that creates you, and sustains your existence. In fact, everything that exists, God creates, and he maintains the existence of that being. If God would, it's like you have a cable, everybody or everything connects them to God. And if God was, what did what? If he cut that connection, then that entity or being would instantly vanish because it would cease to exist. Now the Satan is connected to God then directly. Man, Adam, Chava, everything is connected to God directly through, let's say, an imaginary cable and so on. Every angel is connected directly to God. And their existence depends on God's will to not only create that being, but to maintain its existence. So God said, because you diminished my existence, guess what? I'm going to diminish yours, measure for measure. So you know what I'm going to do? What does it mean I'll diminish your existence? You're going to now worry, I'm disconnecting the cable that connects you to me, and that's why you exist. But since you are connected to me via this cable, whatever, you don't worry about your existence. You don't have to struggle to worry, you know, can I exist tomorrow? And so on. Because you are constantly connected to me. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut that cable. Now, technically, you should instantly evaporate, annihilate. You see? So what God did, but what I will do is I will connect the end of your cable, no longer to me, right? But I will connect it to Adam. Wow. So it's like the cable comes down and splits. One part goes into man, Adam, and the other part goes into Satan. You see? But wait a minute. What's interesting is, so how does a Satan exist? Because he takes from the flow of holiness from Adam, and he takes it to himself, and he's part of it, and that's how he exists. So it comes out that the Satan struggles with existence every day. Well, I should say every microsecond. You know, we think he's got a free ride. No. He's got to worry if he's going to beat tomorrow. You see? But what's the condition? So how does he take from man the flow of holiness, which is divine energy? How? And the answer is, he gets man to violate the commandment of God, to sin against God's commandment. And therefore, had the man done the mitzvah, he would have brought down that divine flow, which I said is the Hispashtis Kedusha. Instead, what happens is that flow, partially whatever, goes to the Satan, and therefore there he is. So in a certain sense, the Satan is yoinik. Yoinik means he nourishes, right, from the divine flow of the cable that connects God to man. Because now it connects God to man and the Satan. You see? So the Satan is yoinik from the Kedusha. He nourishes from the holiness of a person that should have gone to the person because he's doing a mitzvah. So when that person now sins, so the Satan is able to take the amount of Kedusha that would have gone to the man, and he could take it for himself. But again, it's Midah Keneged Midah, measure for measure. Since the man denies the supremacy of God by violating or denying the mitzvah, therefore his existence is diminished. Because you deny the existence of God as the all-supreme being, therefore your existence is diminished. And that literally happens. Part of the Kedusha that would come to the man goes to the Satan. So the man's Kedusha diminished, which should have, like I said, increased his existence, is detracted and goes to the Satan. So the Satan becomes powerful when the man becomes weak. Isn't that amazing? So it comes out that the Satan worries about his own existence, right, on a daily basis. You know, you think you're the only one worried if you're going to be able to eat tomorrow or whatever, right? The Satan has the same concern. But not only that, his parnosa, his livelihood, depends on stealing your livelihood. It's amazing. So it's called a seesaw. You see, if the man is getting the Kedusha, then the Satan is not getting anything or very little. If the man is sinning, right, then his Kedusha goes to the Satan. So the man suffers by a diminishment of his existence, which is terrible, yisurin, or suffering and so on, and the Satan grows very powerful. So that's a reciprocal relationship. It's a seesaw. They're never equal, because each one is eating off the other. That's called combat. But the one who initiates the downflow, right, of holiness is the Adam, the man, not the Satan. And the Satan has to wait. And the Satan hopes that the man will sin, and therefore what? He will be able to take from the Kedusha from the man. So we see, therefore, the concept of struggle. There's an enormous existential struggle going on. Man against the Satan. We don't realize that. This is so fundamental to how we exist, and so on. So obviously it's combat. This is called a war, because we're both vying for victory. What is victory? Victory is existence, right? So we're both struggling to exist. Combat, because there's only one way of surviving, and that is the divine flow. You know, it's interesting. I always thought that there's a game that America loves that actually illustrates this. It's called football, which is interesting, you know? And each team, right, as far as I know, is trying to steal the football, right, and kick it over to its side. In fact, I always get a kick out of the fact that the side, whatever they call the post, right, is called the goal, right? He scored a goal, and goal is like a Hebrew equivalent of goel, right? The goel, the redemption, because that's really what it is. But there's only one ball, and it's amazing to watch two teams that the whole purpose of their existence, their whole focus, is to get that football. That's all that matters. Everything else is irrelevant. You know, if somebody tries to tempt one of the people running through the field, hey, you know, let me show you a nice, interesting view of something or whatever, you know. I said, the guy will tell me, hey, leave me alone, I'm not interested. The only thing that matters on this field is that ball. I think basketball is another kind of analogy where you have to take the ball and put it over your side. Same concept, where two teams struggle for one object. And that object is the be-all of everything that has meaning, and so on. So that's really, so that we have that relationship with the something. Both sides are struggling for the same object, because that object means existence. It's amazing. So that's a new relationship with the something. Adam before the sin never had that. He had his own cable, and the something had his own cable. He wasn't afraid of evaporating from existence, and so on. Because he had his own connection to God. But afterwards, this is no longer the relationship. That's a very, very important relationship. It's almost like an eternal battle for the main object, you see. And that object is what? Really is Kedusha. It's amazing that even Sutton vies for the Kedusha of the spheres. You know, and it's interesting that there are movies that actually played up this concept of you can have a force where both sides vie for the same force. It can be used for good or can be used for evil. Same force. It's very interesting that in a certain sense, I don't know, there are Hollywood productions that have made use of this very important concept and so on, you know. But in truth, that's really what it is, you know, and so on. By the way, I just as an aside, which is a whole, can be a whole shiur, you know, there are many, before the end of time, God will introduce many Kabbalistic ideas. This is a Kabbalistic concept, obviously, you know, in order that the world should be used to these ideas before the Mashiach comes, and they won't be shocked. So he actually has, which is very interesting, Hollywood, which can promote so many ideas to the world, actually use some of these Kabbalistic concepts, you see? And it's one of the many ways that God uses mankind to spread the true ideas. Just as an aside, that's a lot of very interesting concepts, but it's not simple, and so on. In any case, so therefore we see that's the relationship we do in certain. Now, if that's the case, what do we see? Well, wait a minute. The more force, the more shefa, the more divine energy you have from the spheres, the greater is your existence. The greater is the quality of your existence. If you have a lot, right, which will mean that the sutton will have much less from you, then your existence is tremendous quality. You know, you have tremendous livelihood, you have nachas from all your kids, you know, you're healthy, and so on. You have tremendous mazel, right? You will have that. That's what happens, and so on, you know. And a sutton who's denied your particular shefa will be sick. He will be weak, you see, and vice versa. If you sin, then the sutton can take your private holiness, and he becomes strong, which has, in many ways, terrible repercussions for the Jewish people. you see, and he will be powerful and give that power to the nations of the world. That's how they get their power. They get it from the Sultan's ability to take from the holiness of the Jew. So this has what's called cosmic repercussions. This isn't simple. You see, the success and the power and the might of nations depends on how much Kiddusha, holiness, that the Sultan has been able to steal from the Jews by getting them to sin. It's through combat. And this is what we witness all the time throughout history and so on. In any case, so therefore, it comes out very interesting that before the sin of Adam, right, all he had to do was take down, turn the 100-watt bulb into a 1,000-watt bulb. You see? Because that's all it was. He just had to bring down more Kiddusha, more holiness, divine force, because it was only up there. That's all. And he's got to go and take down and turn up the wattage, so to speak, to increase, transform reality. But once the Sultan is now tied to the mankind, specifically the Jewish people, right? It's no longer up there. It's now in the hands of the Sultan. Because the Sultan has been yoinek, he has nourished from your Kiddusha. So guess what? You now have to take that Kiddusha, take it out of the hands of the Sultan, and restore it to what's called the side of holiness. And from there you could take it down. You see? So it comes out a two-part job. That's the Kfiyah Surah, to subdue evil by removing, you see, and starving the Sultan from that Kiddusha and putting it in what's called Sitra de Kiddusha, the side of holiness, by taking it away from Sitra Akhra, the other side, which is the side of the Sultan. See that? So therefore, there are two basic operations that the Jews are involved with. You see, Adam was only involved in one. But after the sin, they now has a new operation called Kfiyah Surah, to subdue evil by removing the Kiddusha that he took as a result of the sins of the Jew. And this is a very, very important concept. Okay. So I've now defined, and by the way, there is a repercussion. When a person has the Kiddusha, then he immediately receives a consequence. What is the consequence? That he has what's called Oiz and Teferis, might and beauty. That's what he has. What is Oiz? Oiz is might, success. It doesn't only mean physical might, but it means that everything goes your way. You see? So Oiz means literally might, but it means the successful involvement in the struggle to exist. Oiz, power, and so on. That's Oiz. And it means success. Teferis is beauty. Beauty is what? Is the quality of civilization. The beauty, the chokhmah, the wisdom, you see, the whatever it be, the scientific, the technological, just the quality of life is beautiful because it's superlative. So that's Teferis. When you have the divine force in your pocket, so to speak, then you get Teferis and Oiz. Those are the two gifts that you get because you have the divine flow. If the Sultan has it, then he gets the Teferis and Oiz, right? But he doesn't get Teferis and Oiz, but he's able to give that Teferis and Oiz to the nations of the world. Because the Sultan has one objective. In fact, that's his main objective. His main objective before the sin was to get Adam to sin. His main objective now is to exist, because he now has to struggle for his own existence. So what he wants to do is get the nations of the world to get the Jews to sin. Because when the Jews sin, guess what? Then he collects the sparks of holiness, and he's able to give it to the nations of the world. That's all he wants. He wants to deter the Jews from doing mitzvahs. That's his entire reason for being, so to speak. And believe me, never underestimate his will, because that's what he thinks about all day long. You know, we think, well, what does a Sultan think about all day long? Well, it should have been, like it was before the sin of Adam, that what he thinks about is getting the Jew, tempt them to sin, to uphold justice. That's really what the job was, to tempt him, to get him to sin, to get him to struggle, to do a mitzvah, and then that Jew will be rewarded, you see? But right now, the Sultan has an ulterior motive, and that is he has to get the Jew to sin in order for him to survive. And that's all he thinks about. Same thing with the football player. He's not interested in anything else, but where is that football? And how do I get it? And when I get it, how do I get it over my goalpost? That's it. I mean, these are ideas which, you know, which the people don't really think about, but it reveals in many ways the true occupation of the Sultan, you see? Any case, this is what the Sultan does and so on. In any case, okay. So, therefore there are two jobs. The first job is to bring down the Kedusha, the sparks. But the real job now, depending on how much mankind or the Jewish people sin, the real first job is to get back all the Kedusha that he took. Then you take that and you put it back into the heart side of holiness. And then as a result of that, we can then bring down the rest to transform reality. That's the formula. That's how it works. So Kfir Surah, which did not exist at the time of the sin, now becomes the primary goal of the Jewish people first. That's why Jews are in many ways divided. There are certain Jews that are brought down. Their mission, right, is to fight the Sultan. Now, how do we get back the Kedusha? By resisting the temptations of the Sultan in many ways, you see. Also, if you repent, then you take back the holiness that he took from you. Or if you suffer, you also take back. So there are ways that you could take back that, in a certain sense, repercussions that you cause by sinning. So that's the first thing, Kfir Surah. And the second thing is the Kedusha. By the way, just an aside, that's the beginning of the understanding of why there are two Mashiachs. Mashiach ben Yosef, his job is to contend with the Sultan, to fight the Sultan, you see. And as a result of that, right, to take back all the Kedusha that he took and bring it back to our side. And the Mashiach ben David, his job is to bring down all the sparks and change reality. You see, and they're really two different types of jobs, because one job is involved in contending and battling the Sultan, and the other job doesn't contend with the Sultan, but rather to learn Torah, increase holiness as much as you can, and so on. And therefore you'll notice that people are divided, you know, in those two jobs and so on, you know. For instance, you know, many Jews that work, let's say in 47th Street, Manhattan, in the Diamond District and so on. So clearly they have to battle the Sultan, the satanic incentives, every day. So their job is really in the job of Kfir Surah, much more than his Pashtas Kedusha. Then you have those people that say Shurim, or they have a yeshiva, they are Rosh Yeshiva. Their job is to increase holiness, right, by increasing Torah and so on. So we have two distinct jobs, you see, that is resulted from the dichotomy of these two tasks. Now, once we understand this, we can now begin to understand, you know, what happens basically in mankind and so on. So we have what's called Noach. And what Noach did is he had to save the world from what? Because the world was so evil. There was such a breakdown in society that the Sultan had an incredible amount of unique nourishment that he took from mankind, because the original contract with man is that all mankind can do the tikkun. You see, all mankind, not just Jews. In fact, there was no such thing as a Jew, and so on. All mankind had the power to bring down the Kedusha, and therefore all mankind in that sense was a Yisrael. Because that's really what a Yisrael is. Somebody who has the ability, the capacity, he has the neshama of being able to do the tikkun. That's what makes him a Yisrael. But it was all mankind. It wasn't just the Jewish people. They didn't exist yet until Avram. In any case, that was their job. But they had sinned grievously. And as a result of that, the Satan had enormous amount of power. He had the tferes and eyes, you see, because that was lost with mankind. And of course, he had so much that God said he has too much, and mankind therefore cannot survive, and it was destroyed, and so on. In any case, so we begin to see the exchange here as a result of the sinning of the generation of the flood. And then the Rabbeinu Shem approached Avraham Avinu, and he said to Avraham Avinu, mankind is sinning, and I'm going to take away the power of Tikkun from mankind. They will no longer be called Yisrael. They will just be called nation of the world. They'll be called Goy. I'm going to give the power of Tikkun. I will let it allow to remain with you, because he already had it, right? And you and your descendants will do the Tikkun, which means that the relationship that you have with the Satan is purely Jewish. You're the one who has combat with the Satan, not the nations of the world, because only you can affect the descent of the sparks and who it goes to. Only the Jew can determine that, you see, and therefore he could do the tikkun. And if you do the mitzvahs and your descendants will do the mitzvahs, you will do the tikkun, right? And as a result of that, you can have the entire redemption and so on. You will have done the tikkun and so on. And therefore, v'nivrchu b'cho, in you will be blessed all the earth, not in them, because you will have done the tikkun. But the good news is that, great, because the reward of somebody does the tikkun is extraordinary. But the bad news is you now got a partner. You know, you got somebody who now has become a tremendous enemy. So the major focus of the Sultan, guess what? It's for you and your descendants to sin. And that's obviously one of the reasons why the Sultan tried to get Avraham Avinu to sin 10 times. Because Chazal say he had 10 tests and so on. Because he needed the unico from Avraham Avinu to survive, you see. In any case, so that's the bad news, you know, that the Sultan now has the combat relationship with Avraham Avinu and so on. And that discontinued to Yitzchak, to Yaakov. And by the way, we now have a better understanding of Yaakov and Esav. Why are they Yaakov and Esav? I mentioned a long time ago that Esav is an Ov, a patriarch, right? But he's a patriarch that sinned. And as a result of that, he left the fold. So therefore, what was the original job? If Esav was a patriarch as well as Yaakov, so what's the original job and why was there two? And the answer is because Yaakov Avinu's job was Yoshev Yeholam, to sit in the tent and learn Torah. That's called Ispashtus Kedusha. You see, that was really his job. Bringing holiness by how? By thinking, contemplating about God. You see, Esav's job was Kfir Surah. Now we understand. That's why he was born with an unbelievable Yetzirah, because that was his setup. Not that he was supposed to sin, but he had to be tempted by the Satan, and if he would be victorious by resisting the temptations, right, that's his job, to take back all the sparks of holiness. That's really who they were. So Yaakov Avinu was his Pashtus Kedusha, is in the spirit of Mashiach ben David. Esav is to take back the Kedusha, Kfir Surah, that's in the spirit of Mashiach ben Yosef. So now you understand why there are two different ovos, because really it's one continuum, which means get the sparks to change Olam Hazeh, but it's two different operations, you see. In any case, where do we find the next? Yosef. Now, since Yosef was, without getting into the whole thing which I once mentioned, Yosef was a chatzi of, you see. Since Esav left the fold by sinning, right? So he had to be replaced with somebody else. So what the Rebbe Shem did is he replaced them with Yaakov Avinu first. And that's why, since Yaakov Avinu now took over the job of Esav, that's why he left the house of Yitzchak to go into what's called the house of the Satan, which is Lavan. That's why he had to leave, also go and now be tempted by the Satan, by the temptations of the world. That's why he went to Lavan's house, you see? So Yaakov now took over half the job of Esav. And by the way, that's why he married his wife, or the wife that was intended to be for Esav, which is Leah. Because now that Yaakov took over both jobs, he had Rachel and he also had Leah. But the problem is, one man cannot do two jobs, because it requires different characteristics. So what the Moshe arranged is that Yaakov should have himself an Ov, a Chatzi Ov, half a patriarch, that would have the power, you see, of Esav, but not completely. Who was that? Yosef. So since Yosef now had the job of Kfir Surah, to take back the Kedusha from the Satan, that the Satan took, he now had that power. So he had to go into the den of sinning, which is Egypt. That's why he had to do that. That was his job, you see. So he went to Egypt in order to be tempted. Then we know the temptations. There was a Potiphar's wife and the whole business of being in Egypt, which is a terrible place of incest and so on. And he resisted, you see. But since he resisted, right, he did a tremendous tikkun, which is to do what? He took back an enormous amount of energy, divine energy, that was in the hands of the Satan, you see. So when the Satan loses all that energy because of the incredible struggle that Yosef had, then he starves. Well, guess what? If the Satan starves, then his major agent also starves, because that agent, which happened to be Egypt, gets its power from all the Kedusha that the Satan took from what the Jews were doing. But actually, Egypt had that power not because of the Jews sinning. It was because of the 2,000 years of mankind's history that they sinned. And remember what I said, before Avraham Avinu, everybody had the power of Tikkun, which means everybody could bring down the Kedusha. But when they sinned by the marble and so on, they gave all that power to the Satan. So that's why God said to Avraham Avinu, your nation will go into a nation that they don't know for 400 years, whatever. Because when the Rebbe Hashem told Avraham Avinu that you will take over the job, what he told him, it's not enough to bring down the light of the spheres. You need to take back all the energy that the nations of the world, because they had the power to give, has given that nation, which we were the major agent of the Satan. They got to take that back. And now you know why the Jews went to Egypt. Because part of their job was Kfir Surah. That's really why they went to Egypt. They had to take back all that energy that they gave, right, to the Satan, who then empowered Tiferes Hanoes. He gave beauty and might to Egypt, most powerful nation on earth, you see. So Yosef was the beginning of that. So when he succeeded in denying the temptation, he bankrupted the Satan, which automatically bankrupted Egypt. And now you know why Egypt starved for 7 years. That starvation is an indication that the Tiferes and Ois, the beauty and the might that they had, is now bankrupt, you see. And therefore Yosef got himself out of prison, right, by bankrupting Egypt, and by first bankrupting the Sultan, not totally. but enough where he would become Grand Vizier, which is second to Paroi, not as powerful as Paroi. You see, so this relationship explains why there was a famine in Egypt, and what does Yosef have to do with the famine, besides revealing it to Paroi? Because in many ways, Yosef created the famine by withstanding the evil of the Sultan, you see, in Egypt, and therefore the Sultan would starve, and therefore Egypt would starve. It's very interesting how he got out of Egypt by his own might and so on. You see, then we come to Egypt, and we now know the reason for Egypt, which is very important. The Jews had to finish up the job. They had to bankrupt Egypt, because Egypt was the most powerful nation on earth. It had the Tiferes and Ois. Because of what? Not because of the sins of the Jews, because the sins of the 2,000 years of mankind that sinned and had the capacity, right, to misakin, to rectify creation. It was their Kedusha, right, that they gave to the Sultan. But now that the Jews took over the job, they had to remove it from Egypt and bring it back to Kedusha, the side of holiness, you see. So therefore, that's why they had to go to Egypt, because they took over the job of the nations of the world. You see, very important concept. In any case, and therefore, it's interesting how God alludes to that. When God approached Avraham Avinu by the covenant between the pieces, Bris Bin Absarim, he says to Avraham Avinu, you know, there will be strangers in the land. Geyi Zaracho, your nation, will, descendants will be strangers in the land for 400 years, right? And then V'achar Kach, and afterwards, Yeitzu B'ruchush Godl, they will go out with great possessions. So we know what that means. They went out with the wealth of Egypt. But the gematria of Yeitzu B'ruchush Godl is the exact gematria of Nitzotze Kedusha, sparks of holiness. Isn't that amazing? Right? Because Kabbalistically or mystically, that's really what they were there for. Not just to remove the spoils of Egypt, but to remove the sparks of holiness that the Egyptians had as a result of the sins that mankind did for 2,000 years. And not only that, after they left Egypt, it says, V'yotzu kol tzivus Hashem me'eretz Mitzrayim, after they left. And all the hosts, right, kol tzivus Hashem, all the hosts of God went out from Egypt. It says that. It's amazing. Okay? So who is all the tzivus? Everything left, including the sparks of holiness, because that's who the Jews had been successful in taking out. That was a whole real objective, you see? And therefore the gematria of Yotzu called Tzivus Hashem, and they left all the hosts of Egypt, is gematria Nitzotzei Kedusha. Same thing. It's amazing that the very words that convey the meaning of the whole story of Egypt is in the exact gematrias that indicate that they will go out with tremendous wealth, and that they will go out. You now understand the real story of Egypt is a spiritual task to remove the sparks of holiness and to bankrupt the Sultan. But what happened to Egypt? You never really hear from it again. I mean, they became a small-time local, but they never achieved the greatness of the Tiferes and Ois, the beauty and might that they achieved before, you see. And by the way, what's important is that's our gifts. And you will see that we've given those gifts to the nations of the world. Because what does it really say? In the brachas of Shachar in the morning, it says, Oize Yisrael b'gvura, who girds Israel, right, with gvura. That's the Oiz. And then the next bracha is Oite Yisrael b'sifora, right, who crowns Israel with beauty. That's the Tiferes. You see? That's really what we have. We have the Oiz, the might, gvura, and we have the Tiferes, the beauty. That's our gift. And that comes when we have the Kedusha, the holiness, the sparks. But when we lose the sparks, because we sin, then the Satan gets that, and he gives the Tiferes and Oiz, the beauty and the might, he gives it to the nations of the world, you see, to try to tempt the Jews to sin. In any case, we now understand very well, fascinatingly, the whole concept of what? The whole concept of Egypt and so on, the real basic story and so on, you know, and so on. So that, again, we see how sparks of holiness play out in a major Jewish event. Now, that continues, by the way, since the Jews sinned at the golden calf, right? So therefore, the problem was, is they restored, not in total, but a large amount of the holiness back into the Sultan's hands. That was the problem. The sin of the golden calf isn't that they worshipped a calf, but it's also, it gave that tumor, that defilement, those sparks back in the hands of the Sultan. Not totally, but a lot. So therefore, the job of the Jew, which is Kfir Surah, to subdue evil, continued. It remained, you see. Had they accepted the Torah without doing the sin of the golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu would have been Mashiach ben Yosef, and that would have been the redemption itself. And therefore we find that since they had tremendous amount of the sparks, right? That's why we find that the Jews now experienced Tiferes and Oiz. You see, they had independence. Not only that, they had kings. And it really reached this its top idea, okay, how, when? By David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was one of the most powerful kings on the planet in those days. You know, there are many Midrashim that allude to that, that it was a magnificent kingdom, because the Jews at that point in time had so much Kiddusha that they took away from the Sultan. Enormous amount. Wasn't total, but it was a great deal. So the Tiferes and Oiz, the beauty and might that they have, was in the hands of the Jewish people. Until they began sinning with Avodah Zarah and so on. And that continued to such an extent, right, where the amount of Kedusha was so much in the hands of the Satan that God had to destroy his Beis HaMikdash, which he did, you see. And as a result of that, the Jews now had to be exiled to four different kingdoms, you see. And this is where we begin to see something very interesting. Remember, the Jews, their job is to take back all the sparks from the Sultan back into the holiness of the spheres and then bring it down to change Olam Hazeh into Olam Haba. You see, but what was interesting is that we now begin to see the interchange. When they entered Babylon, for instance, Babylon was the most powerful country in the world, Nebuchadnezzar. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Well, what does that mean? Because the sparks of holiness was incredibly vested in Babylon, you see. And therefore, they were among the most powerful nations in the world. On the Nebuchadnezzar, you see. So the job of the Jew in Babylon, of course, was to try to take it back, which they did, by the way, to a great extent, okay? And what happens if the Jews resist the temptations of evil, right? And they resist the temptation of assimilating and so on, and not worshiping in Babylon and so on, right? What happens? Well, what happens then is that the sparks go back in the Jews and Babylon collapses. Why? Why would a world empire, because that's really what it was, one of the world empires, right? Why would it collapse? And the answer is, we now understand. When the Jews go into a country, why are they so great? Where do they get their Tiferes and Oiz? And the answer is because That's the holiness, the kedusha, the sparks that the Jews give over because of whatever sin they did. And there were a lot of sins in those days, you know, and so on. That's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the Jews go into that country and they do whatever the Aveda is, which is basically to resist assimilating. So what happens when the Jews do that? Then they take out all the sparks that the Satan has from that, you know, from that country. Because the one who gives them the sparks is the Satan. But wait a minute. What happens if all of a sudden the Satan loses the sparks? Then he doesn't have what to give that country. You see. So guess what? They collapse. Or they diminish severely in world status. And that's why you find that whenever the Jews go into a place and they leave, then that place basically collapses. Maybe not as a society, but certainly as a world dominant society. Well, guess what? Where was the next place? Persia, right? And the tshuva, the repentance of what the Jews in Persia did, was so great that Persia collapsed. And after a while, Alexander dies, and it's over, you know. And then who's the next country that has? So you don't really hear Persia, although Iran today is desperately trying to recoup their status and so on, you know. So they collapsed from their world power status. Then the next nation is Greece, right? And Greece, again, was a world power, you know, under Alexander and so on, right? And Greece also became what? Also lost its world-class status and so on. You see? But notice the pattern here. Jews go in, stay, and try to, you know, avoid becoming assimilated and so on. And obviously they succeed to a certain extent, and that nation loses its tiferes and ois. In fact, what it says, Ad Mosai Uzchu Bashvi, it says that in Shachas by Tachnum, Ad Mosai Uzchu Bashvi, how long will your might be in captivity? And, right, and they're saying that about the Jews, Vesif Altcho, and your beauty be Yatso in the hands of the enemy, right? That's it, that's the tiferes and ois that goes into the nations of the world itself, because we sin, and the Satan is able to take. Right? Because that's the original relationship. But when the Jews finally do go in and they do their job, whatever their job is in the Avodah, in the service of God, and then it collapses. It loses its tiferes and ois, you see? And therefore Greece basically lost its tiferes and ois, even though they existed today. I mean, today Greece is nobody. Yeah, I don't want to insult Greece, but it's basically nothing in terms of what it used to be. And then, of course, we come to Rome. Now, Rome already is a different story because Rome is Edom. And Edom, or Esav, actually, right, has become the dominant agent of the Satan, you see. But the interesting thing about it is that the Jews in Rome itself also, the problem with Rome is that the Jews continuously, they continue to sin in Rome. And apparently, the formula works, but much slower. So Rome used to be a nation, right? And that basically collapsed, you see, as a nation, you see? And then what happened? So even as a nation, it collapsed, but it did transform into a religion called Christianity. Because Rome, Edom, is really today Christianity, you see? And Christianity itself is collapsing, believe it or not. How? Well, the first major rift, it's not just Christianity, it's the power, and in many ways, unfortunately, the evil of the church that has killed how many hundreds of millions of Jews over the lifetime of Christianity, which is 2,000 years, right? So they also have done tremendous, they also have tiferes and ois, because the domination of the world is that tiferes and ois of Christianity. So God diminished them, because by a certain period of time, in the 1500s and so on, the Jews had withstood the assimilation into Christianity and the desire of Christians to destroy the Jews and so on. And whatever they did, So all of a sudden there was a revolt against the power of the church. Luther, that's really, Luther was a tremendous, what he called, impediment to Christianity. It went from Roman Catholic and it went to becoming Protestant, which removed the status of the Pope and all the saints. They severely diminished the power of the church, which was the essence of Christianity for all those thousand years and so on, you see. But as the Jews go into Edom, which is Western civilization, the power of individuals also collapses. Again, because it all depends how much Kedusha they take back. So what happened? So even the power of the church has severely diminished because of the rise of science, right? The Reformation and the Renaissance and so on. The rise of science severely diminished the power of the monarchies and the evil that is perpetrated in these nations. And then from science, it diminished into what? Into democracy. See, democracy is really a diminishment of the power of the nation itself, because the ability to do things, evil, whatever, is no longer in the hands of an oligarchy, a concentrated few. It is now in the hands of the people. Not that, that doesn't mean that a democracy can't be evil, but it's much harder in a democracy to kill Jews than it is in a kingdom, and so on, you see. So you begin to realize there's a slow deterioration where the Jews go into. I mean, look, what's the classic? Christian Spain, right? They were world power, we know that, before the Armada, the Spanish Armada went out, right? Because they kicked all the Jews out in 1492. And after that, there was a battle, of course, with Britain, whatever. And they severely, now they're nobody. I mean, nobody thinks of Spain as having any kind of Pharisees, you see. So this is what happens with Jews, the Sultan, and the nations of the world. It's amazing to look at the pattern, you know, especially if you want to look at it and analyze it much more in detail in terms of the history of the Jewish exiles and so on. In any case, so that brings us, when you think about that, to something which we now begin to see something. Well, remember what I said, right? That the Jews struggled to remain Jewish and not to assimilate, you see. But there's something that's happening. There's something that's happening. If we follow the pattern of the what the Jews do when they go into a nation, then we begin to see something or realize something. And say, wait a minute. The Jews have been in America for hundreds of years. I think the first Jew entered New Amsterdam, which is basically New York, in 1670 or whatever the date was and so on. So the Jews have been here for a long time, you see. And even in the concept of Europe, you know, the Jews were in Europe for 1,000 years, basically under Christianity. I mean, Europe itself has severely diminished. Europe is no longer what it used to be. I mean, when you think about it, world history for the last 1,000 years really is European history, because there was no America, it was all Europe, whether it be England or France and so on, you know, Italy, whatever. But right now, they're basically, I hate to say it, but they're basically minor people. I mean, look at England, right? England, they said the sun never set on the English kingdom, the English, the British Empire and so on. That's how powerful England was, right? And now what is England today, when you think about that? Because what happens is the Jews enter, like I said, you know the formula. They enter, they do whatever they have to do, and God knows exactly how much they've done. They leave with all the Kedusha, all the sparks of holiness, they leave. And the Tferes and Ois of that nation collapses. You see? It goes, and even though it's not enough to come back to the Jews, but it's taken away, right? And given over, so the Sultan now has to re-energize a new nation with whatever he has left. You see, so we constantly see this diminishment or reduction in the beauty and the might of a civilization that the Jews have gone through. So the question is now, well, what about now in America? Based on this formula, we would say something interesting is happening. America is really dying. It's really what's happening. America is no longer the civilization we knew even 30 years ago. America has become a banana republic. I mean, we can't believe what America has become in 3 years. It's unbelievable. The question is, what does that mean? Because we have forgotten the formula. The Jews have been in America for a long time, and they've done whatever their job was to do, right? But we know the underlying pattern is that they will do their job to whatever extent God requires, whatever, and therefore they will remove the Tiferes and Ois. Guess what? The Tiferes and Ois of America is gone. There's crime in every city. Every city has crime. There's no safety, you know, and so on. You know, there's no beauty. San Francisco's, I hate to say it, is basically, you know, a toilet. It's hard to believe these cities that were magnificent, and now you wouldn't even want to walk into them. So, but the problem with America is more, is worse, because it's not only that America is losing their beauty and might. America is losing their ability to be a civil society. That's a breakdown in civilization. It's not just a breakdown in might and sophistication and so on, you see? It's they are losing their status as a civilized society. The crime is rampant in so many different cities. Then you have the southern border. There's no more border. I mean, could you imagine millions of people crossing the border? That's not a country anymore. And besides, every state is now a border town, border state. The migrants are taking over. I mean, 12 million is a staggering amount of migrants, and they're now all over the United States. And that's going to dilute. I'm not even going into the crime that the migrants commit. And America is clearly irrational. They're giving more to illegal migrants than they give to their own citizens. It used to be that if you were a legal migrant, right? So America would say, okay, you now have equal opportunity. That's all. That's the gift we give you. You're in America. America's a land of opportunity. You're now equal. You can do whatever you want in America. But that's no more the case. You see, we now, America has now become a not a equal opportunity, it's equal outcome. You see, that we will give you everything for free. Your outcome has to be equal to every other citizen's. But you're doing to them more than you did to any citizen. Every citizen had to work, difficulty and work, right, in order to get where they are. And you're giving it to illegal migrants, the exact outcome as people who have worked for 30 years, 40 years? It's insane. So what we're watching in America is worse than what we've seen in other civilizations. Because you can collapse, you can diminish and go bankrupt in Tiferes and Ois, but that doesn't mean you go bankrupt in society. But America has done that. And I believe there's a reason for that. Because besides the fact, there's a second idea involved. It's one thing to lose your Tiferes and Ois because you've lost your sparks of holiness. And now the Sultan, right, he's starving, so he doesn't have anything to give you, right? Which is exactly what happened in Egypt. But the problem is that nations are held responsible for their own sin. I believe what the Rebbe Hashem is doing is punishing America. Why? Because of the LGBTQ. Because America is doing exactly what happened by the Mabel, the flood. If you recall, I once quoted a Medrash Rabbah that says the following, that what sealed the decree of the flood is because if a guy would marry another guy or an animal, he would have to write that person a contract, a marriage contract. So God said, enough is enough, because what you're doing is not just an insanity. What you're doing is doing what? Is you're destroying civilization. What is this? You give a guy a marriage contract? If you marry another guy or marry an animal, I will destroy you. Because that endangers the ability of a society to sustain itself. So I believe two things are going on in America. One is it's losing its fairs and ois, and that's why, and God is taking away the free will of America. It's unbelievable what's happening. You know, one of the things killing America, right, it's not just the southern border, right, but it's the drugs and the human trafficking and the sex trafficking. It's unbelievable what's going down south. Millions of people are affected, right? So a society cannot sustain itself. So it's one thing for America to lose its tfers and ois, you see, but we're witnessing something much worse, the destruction of American society. Because America used to be a normal, civil, you know, dignified society. And now, like I say, it's just incredible to watch. So, therefore, insane edicts, laws are being passed. The judicial system in New York is dead. We see that, you know, what they've done to Donald Trump. These cases make no sense. And everybody who has a brain on his head says, this is not a crime. What, are you crazy? You give a guy a $425 or $455 million, what do you call it, bond that he's got to come up with. What? In a case that has no victim, no damage, and it's purely subjective anyway. And he told them, Trump told the banks, do your own due diligence. So what, are you crazy? What are you doing? Of course the whole thing is insane. So we are watching the death of a judicial system. It's a mockery of justice. These judges who are doing this have no idea what their retribution will be when God puts his foot down. They have no idea. They will wish they were never born because they are making a mockery of justice. So what we're witnessing is not only the weaponization of the CIA, the FBI, right, or the intelligence department, the lies, the cheating. You know, and we're watching the destruction, the wholesale insanity of inflation, the insanity of what Biden is doing, and so on. You know, we are watching much more than just the removal of tfers and ois, beauty and might. We are watching the destruction of America. And like I say, why? Because America is being punished, not only because they gave up their sparks, because they have introduced factors that will destroy civilization. Basically, woke philosophy and LGBTQ. Just like in the days of the Mabel. That's why God destroyed the world. He's obviously intent on destroying America. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. All I'm trying to do is explain what is happening based on the divine plan. I wish I was wrong, but let me tell you something. This is exactly what's happening. So, you know, we look at this and we say to ourselves, so what does that mean? What's going to happen as a result of all of this and so on, you know? Well, let me tell you something very, very interesting, and it's going to come as a shock. America will not be destroyed. Not only because they have done good things. Their foreign budget is more than any other nation in the world, chesed. Their ability, or the fact that they let Jews learn Torah, right, unhindered and so on, you know, and unpersecuted, is a tremendous schus that they have, no question about that, you see. But there's another reason which is quite shocking when you think about it, because America is going to change. Why? God has decreed an end to the insanity and the madness of Joseph Biden. Why? Because Trump, like I said, is a messianic figure. Of course he's not Mashiach, he's not Jewish even, but Edom, Esav has a Mashiach. Like I said, in the end of time, Esav does tshuva, you see. But if that's the case, that's very interesting. That means that America will now assist the Jews in bringing the Mashiach. And that's what it means. Ravi Avitsoya, right? The older will assist the younger. To do what? to do the tikkun, right? To bring the geula. Yeah, but wait a minute. If that's true, then America has been assigned an incredible role, you see. And I want to tell you something which is very interesting. One of the reasons why Persia, Iran, is strong today, and why they have become such a great threat, right, is because they're being rewarded. Right. What's the reward? The reward is that Persia allowed Ezra to come back and build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what happened. You see, because I forgot who it was, Cyrus, one of the emperors of Persia, kings of Persia, whatever, I think it was Cyrus, has allowed the Jews to come back under Ezra to rebuild the second temple. Right. And God doesn't forget. So therefore God said, in the end of time, which we are now, I will allow you to regain your status, right, as an empire. Isn't that interesting? So even they were destined to follow the pattern of collapse or the loss of Tiferes and Ois, right? I will allow you to regain some of your status as a world power. Unfortunately, it's a world power that threatens everybody. But Iran is no longer somebody you can avoid. They've become in many ways a world power, especially that they've unified now with Russia and China and North Korea and whatever. But that's the reward. So they violated, or they deviated, interestingly enough, from the status where they would completely collapse and never rise again. America, because Trump is Edom or Esav doing tshuva, and we see that he's assisting Israel. He's the greatest president that has benefited Israel in the entire American history. There's no question about that. And assisting Israel, I mean, look what he's done. Taking on the UN, taking on the Arabs, taking on all the Arab political movements and so on, right? The Abraham Accords, recognized Jerusalem as a capital. Whoever heard of things like that? Even though many of the acts that he did were contrary to what was in the self-interest of the United States itself, which I've dealt with and so on. Why? Because Trump is ace of doing tshuva, and therefore something unique is about to happen. That the Kedusha that is now back in the hands of the Jewish people, because the Sutton, which I once spoke about, 98% of the Kedusha is no longer in the hands of the Sutton. It is in the hands of the Jews. That's why the Sutton is gathering in as much as he can to destroy Trump. Because Trump has now become the greatest enemy of the Sutton, you see. Because he's now here to help the Jews bring the Mashiach, bring the Geula. Of course, what I'm saying, he doesn't know, and so on. And therefore, here's the kicker. The kicker is that he will enjoy the sparks of the Jews. He gets it back. Because that's what empowers him and the Jewish people, right, of Tiferes and Ois. So therefore, it's astounding when you think about that. He is the savior of America, you see? Because what's destroying America from Tiferes and Ois, right, is not only the southern border, right, and the crime and the inflation and the spending out of all common sense. It's unsustainable. The debt of America, it's just incredible. So America is headed for a terrible depression, you see, and they may even lose the reserve currency status of the dollar, because it's worthless. All America does is print dollars. Nobody wants that. Therefore, what's interesting is America should be incredibly grateful to Donald J. Trump, because since he is now allying himself with Jews, and he will continue with the Abraham Accords, guess what? He will now be a recipient of part of the Nitzotze Kedusha, the sparks of holiness that the Jews have, because he's now considered Rav Yavoi Tzoye. The older will serve the younger. I mean, talk about a twist of fate. And that's why America will not be destroyed, because they will become the ally of the Jews. They will, he will change America, you see. But what's interesting also is, if that didn't happen, then the question is, wait a minute, then where are the sparks now? Right? Where do they go? Because they always go to different nations. And the Sultan, with whatever he has left, always picks a nation that will be his main major agent to sin. You know which nation he picked? China. What gives the power of China? Do you ever wonder? They came out of nowhere. They were nobodies 50 years ago. You know, what were they? So the Sultan now has his major aid in China. So they are rapidly becoming Fersenoids, right? They're the second greatest economy on the planet, although they're not doing well, right? But that's because it won't happen. Fortunately, because Trump is going to take back the Kedusha, because he now has become an ally and a servant of Yaakov, therefore, whatever China has will not remain with China, you see? Because the Jews far outnumber the Kedusha that they have than that the Sultan has left in his pocket. But it's fascinating to see that there's two things going on. And people don't realize, at the same time that America is collapsing and deteriorating, not only as beauty and might disappears, right? With all the terrible things happening in America, right? But at the same time that they are dying as a civil society, who is building up? Because there's always somebody that builds up that the Sultan has to give somebody else, the Tiferes Hanois. And the answer is China. Although interesting, China is not Esav. China is Yefes, you see? But apparently he's next in line, you see? But isn't that interesting? Two things happening simultaneously. And both are explained with the two fundamental operations of what happens in this world. So America, one day, and I believe that day will come shortly, will America, when he becomes president, Donald Trump, you are going to see a cry of happiness and joy that you've never heard. Probably the stock market will go through the roof, because everybody's going to say to themselves, besides the liberal progressives that are destroying this country, thank God that God is saving America, because Trump will restore that. Okay, isn't that interesting? You now understand the fundamental tasks of the Jew, our relationship with evil and the Sultan, the whole meaning of Egypt, the four nations that subjected the Jews to exile and so on. You see how God diminishes everything. And why what we're seeing today is beyond belief. I'm telling you, we've never seen a deterioration of the United States with such rapidity as we have now. Because like I say, they are not only dying, you know, as the beauty and the might of America, where the cities are basically turned into trash cans and so on, right? And the safety, the murders, the crime and the inflation, it's all insane. You see, so it's not only that, but it's also the destruction of the civil society called America and the attempted rise of China. You see, I believe that if it wasn't for the fact that Trump is going to become an ally of Israel and help the Jewish people return to God, China would be the next great nation, because that's the history of the Jewish people. That is the evolution of what happens, which is astounding when you think about that. Okay, so if you ask the question, what's the future of America? Bad news, they're gonna go into the dumps and lose their status of almost everything that they have. And the reason for that is because the real kicker that's destroying America is that America has become woke and become amoral. And therefore, they are now subject to a decree of destruction. Not merely losing the beauty and might, but being a destroyed society, become a banana republic, which is what we're seeing. So I believe everybody has to thank Donald Trump. I realize what I'm saying is extraordinary. but it's true. They have to thank Donald Trump for what, that he is going to restore the sparks back to America, and they will restore the beauty and the might. And that's only because he has now become a new role. A nation has actually now become a Jewish partner in that sense. And that's the Rav Yavoitzoyer. The older will serve the younger. And that prediction, which the Torah says, must be. That's the absolute truth of the Torah itself. And fortunately for us, that's what's going to happen very shortly. Thank you.